Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project. From NPR News, we're online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. So this is the portion of the show when we collect some of the most interesting things sent to the internet, or at least some of the most democratic things sent to the internet. The internet takes it, spits it around, sends it to someone else. It's the most viewed, most shared, most everything. It's the most. And now our most green shirt wearing editor. Hello, Trish.
Editrix. This is Trisha, your editrix.
Go ahead, Trixie.
I have the second most viewed story on the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Here's the headline. Local and national outbreak of grave robbing. But people are apparently not digging up dead bodies as they used to in, you know, movies like Young Frankenstein. This has again to do with the price of scrap metal. So people are stealing like brass and bronze vases and gravestone markers from cemeteries. Apparently these vases are worth about $10 for scrap. But it costs about $300 to replace one. There's a rash of this going on quietly in cemeteries around the mid. This article mostly deals with the Midwest. There are laws now in Illinois and in Missouri. They're using scrap metal dealers to get these guys.
You mean they didn't already have laws against that?
I guess not. No, these laws have to do with scrap metal dealers now. They have to check photo IDs for people who aren't regular customers.
I'd run a sting.
And there are higher fines.
One undercover cop buried a little bit beneath the ground, one hand up through the ground, grabbing the guy's leg.
I think that would stop
Eliminates
anybody.
Eliminates it
Yeah, that'd do the trick.
Well, here's the other thing. They say there is a way relatives can keep their deceased loved ones from becoming targets of thieves. This guy's quoted saying, "Most of the stolen vases we've had come from vases that didn't have any flowers. So please pay attention to your deceased loved ones. Keep them loaded up with flowers, and they won't steal your vase."
Yeah. Until flowers go for a lot of money.
I never know how to say vase or vase. My mother says if it costs more than $10, it's a vase. But yeah, these are right on the edge of that.
If you give it to your aunt, it's a vase. If you give it to your aunt, it's a vase.
Okay, great.
Dawn.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, buddy.
I got a double dose of U.S. government bureaucracy idiocy here in the most.
Both. Wait a minute. You were able to find two examples of this?
I know. It's a big day. Yeah. Both of the most emailed from Yahoo News. First up, U.S. contradicts itself over its own ID theft advice. Basically, you know, identity theft, big risk out there. So the U.S. government, two different parts of it, are giving two contradictory pieces of advice. The Medicare and the Pentagon compel 52 million Americans to carry their social security numbers in their wallets.
Right.
They say you got to keep your Medicare insurance card with you. You got to have your Pentagon ID, which has your social security number on it.
Right.
Meanwhile, the Federal Trade Commission says don't leave your house with your social security number in your wallet. And so what are you going to do? Who do you listen to, Mike? You listen to the FTC or you listen to Medicare?
Well, so, now how do we even know it's Medicare? Maybe it's someone has stolen their identity.
That's true.
Maybe it's a whole big ring.
It might not even be the real Medicare.
Yeah,
and then also, second story, Mandela finally dropped from U.S. terror watch list. That's right. This was a story a little while back. And now finally they've rectified the situation. President Bush removed the former South African president and his African National Congress from the U.S. terror watch list. The bill was sent to the White House last week, signed in time for the anti-apartheid leader and Nobel Peace Prize winner's 90th birthday on July 18th, word is Mandela is going to celebrate his 90th birthday by becoming a terrorist. No, that's not true.
That was funny, but unbelievably offensive. You know?
A
we should just note
are.
That. We're not going to decry it. We'll note it.
Right.
It's both things. It can be both things at once. Ian.
Hey, I got a question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
Taking all things together, would you say you are very happy, rather happy, not very happy, or not at all happy?
I'm rather happy.
Yeah.
Rather.
Okay.
I like rather. Any time a poll has rather, I'll take that.
That is one of the questions on the World Values Survey, you know, the one where they rank which countries are happiest.
Yeah.
This was a most popular on CNN and a couple places. Denmark is number one in happiness. Zimbabwe, shockingly, is last, ranked 97 out of 97 countries.
Yeah. Really, like Robert Mugabe couldn't beat happiness into his people?
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way.
Happiness doesn't come at the end of a lead pipe?
It does not work that way. And one finding is that basically there's a pretty good correlation between freedom of expression and happiness.
Although United States has a lot of freedom of expression.
We're ranked 16th, which is really not bad if there's 97 countries.
Yeah,
and
right.
Another finding is that the world as a whole happier than it was 20 years ago. Which is good news, I guess.
That's mostly the medication in the water.
Right.
Yeah. You know, my friend Eric Weiner wrote a book called The Geography of Bliss, where he got into this whole question. And it kicks off in Denmark because that's where they have the World Happiness Center, Research Center. So maybe they're gaming the findings to make themselves number one.
Yeah.
Also, Iceland happy, Moldova not happy.
That's true.
Trisha.
All
back
right.
to you.
So I have the most viewed and most emailed at MSNBC.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is a quiz. They want to know, can you pass the latest citizenship test? So right. in October...
I hope they don't ask me if I should take my Social Security number with me, because the government apparently has two contradictory findings on that.
No, I don't think that's on here. Well, basically, there's a new version of the citizenship test coming out in October, and so MSNBC picked what they say are some of the more difficult ones of the questions, you know, because they give you, there's 100 questions, and you get a random assortment of them. So MSNBC.com decided which ones are the most difficult, and they came up with a little quiz. Of course, they tweaked everything to be multiple choice, which is not what you get. So, Mike, let's see if you have what it takes to be a citizen. I'm going to pick what I think are the hardest of what they thought were the hardest.
All right.
So let's start with number 5. Which of the following is not a right outlined in the preamble to the Declaration of Independence? Life, liberty, the right to bear arms, or the pursuit of happiness?
That's a hard one.
I know, right?
Bear arms.
Okay. Ding. Which one of these is a right guaranteed by the First Amendment? Yeah. Freedom of the press, trial by jury, bear arms, happiness.
Wait. Bear arms is second. I didn't realize trial by jury. I thought there was like fifth.
Which one is a right guaranteed by the press? Ding. How many amendments does the Constitution have? 10, 17, 23, or 27?
I think it's up to like 27 now. Is that right?
You got it.
Trish, you don't actually have to say ding.
I'm going to say ding because I have the answers and you don't. So what if you have a premature ding and you're not right? See, I have to be the dinger. I'm going to give you one more.
All right.
Which one of these was not among the original states? New Hampshire, New York,
Moldova,
Delaware, or Maine?
Moldova. It's New Hampshire. No, it was Maine. Maine was an outgrowth of New Hampshire.
Yes, we were going to have a one, but now we have a ding.
Yes.
Mike Pesca,
right,
you are a citizen.
I'm a citizen. I'm so happy.
All right. Are you now very happy?
Actually, you shouldn't be happy because now you're a citizen of MSNBC.
Yeah, I'm still on the terrorist watch list. All right.
I got one more most emailed for us. It's from NPR.org. Actually, most viewed from a friend of the BPP, New York Bureau's own Jim Zaroli. It's a story about a hedge fund manager on a crusade to force companies to be more honest when they're losing money. Here's that story.
Each May, hundreds of Wall Streeters show up at the Ira Sohn Investment Research Conference in Lincoln Center. They pay up to $3,200 to hear advice from investors like Carl Icahn and Wilbur Ross. Today, one of the speakers is the brainy, boyish 39-year-old David Einhorn, whose hedge fund has racked up some impressive gains over the years. Einhorn begins with some unfinished business.
I want to go outside the usual format for this investment and ask for this conference and ask this audience by applause who agrees with me that there should be some significant consequence to the folks at Allied Capital for what they have done. Thanks. There's a lot of people here. There's a lot of media here. I want them to hear. Next,
you might say David Einhorn is on a kind of crusade. 6 years ago, at this very conference, he began talking about accounting problems at Washington, D.C.-based Allied Capital. He's still doing so today at some personal cost.
Oh, yeah. The effects of the pushback have been tremendous. There's no question about it. It's expensive. It's been not that pleasant. Certainly, it's a deterrent towards other people standing up and discussing critical research about companies.
In a dressing room after the speech, Einhorn says he first heard about the company when he was researching stocks to buy. Allied is a business development firm that makes loans to medium-sized companies. Einhorn concluded that Allied was using accounting tricks to misstate the value of loans it had issued. Einhorn, who's also a well-regarded poker player, figured that when he laid out his case against Allied, regulators and the media would go after the company. Former journalist Herb Greenberg, who runs a research firm, believes Einhorn made a strong case against the company, and its stock price fell. But then Einhorn himself came under attack.
What so many people on Wall Street don't want to even think about is what the risk is. And that's what David was doing. He was pointing out the risk.
Allied denied Einhorn's allegations. It noted that Einhorn had shorted the company's stock. That meant he would benefit if its value fell. They said by going public with his charges, he was trying to manipulate the price. Einhorn replied that, yes, it was true. He wasn't exactly a disinterested observer, but neither were the managers defending the company. They owned stock and wanted to see it rise. That argument aside, Einhorn found himself called in for an interview with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
It was very Kafka-esque. It was just backwards. It was, you know, investigating the whistleblower, so to speak, rather than investigating the claims.
The SEC wouldn't comment about the case and never brought any charges against Einhorn, but Einhorn has paid a price. A Wall Street Journal columnist likened him to a mugger. He says his wife was asked to leave her job, and Einhorn discovered that an agent hired by a company employed by Allied had illegally accessed his phone records. Allied says it didn't know the agent did this. Allied also says despite federal investigations and shareholder lawsuits, no third party has ever validated Einhorn's claims about the company. Christopher Davies, an attorney for Allied, says the SEC did cite the company for bookkeeping violations, but they were minor.
Neither of those findings supports Mr. Einhorn's inflammatory allegation that Allied has overvalued its investment portfolio. In fact, the SEC did not impose any penalties or other financial disgorgement, nor did it require that Allied restate either its historical financial results or any valuations of its investments.
Einhorn replies that the SEC has an indifferent record of pursuing fraud at companies unless they've clearly imploded, like Enron.
So investors should be aware of this, and they should realize that the only person watching out from them are not these Wall Street analysts and not these corporate managements, but they themselves. And so they need to have appropriate skepticism as they put their money at risk in the market.
After 6 years, Einhorn continues to hold a short position on the stock, betting it will drop further. But Einhorn's campaign against Allied has had mixed results. He notes that since that first speech 6 years ago, Allied has issued new stock numerous times. Einhorn has done his best to lay out a strong case against the company, but so far at least a lot of investors have been willing to look the other way. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.